Thank you, Mr. Kotegawa. I would now like to ask Dr. Choi Hong Jian to speak to us.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I feel a big pressure from the applause you gave to my Asian neighbor. So I will try my best to have this, I think, a little bit relaxed issue. You know, originally, when I was required to have this presentation on Confucius in today's China, I think it may be a kind of break without coffee between so many, you know, difficult issues regarding to the geopolitical, financial crisis, and so on. But now I find it's a almost a mission impossible, because for me, even as a Chinese people, it's just too difficult to make clear in minutes what about the Confucius in today's China, because there are two key points. Firstly, who is the Confucius and what is the Confucianism, and then what's the problem of today's China. So yes, I will try. Firstly, I think Confucius is, I would like to say, maybe a little bit popularized in Europe. But of course, compared with other, you know, Chinese thinker, Lao Tzu, I think for most of German people, you will prefer Lao Tzu more than Confucius, because according to some German philosophers' viewpoints, the Lao Tzu, maybe his theory is more philosopher, especially in the perspective of Germany. But I would like to say, compared with Lao Tzu, the Confucius is a thinker in ancient China with more and more theory, more and more thinkings about the how is the rule, how is the law for the human being, how could we live and work. So I think it's very, very inspiring now for our day, for our problem, and for the challenges, for the crisis we are facing. Exactly, the Confucius has a very, very higher reputation now in the world. As I know that in the year of 1988, the more than 35 Nobel Prize winners, they called for the human being should learn something more from the Confucius wisdom for the survival of mankind. And also, as the American philosopher Mr. Emerson said, that Confucius should be regarded as a glory for all nations in the world. So here I need to quote a sentence from a German philosopher, Mr. Yes, first. He said in his work, his book, The Origin and the Goal of History, said that the Confucius, you know, there is a time or period, it's called the Axis Age, which means almost in the same period, there are some, you know, very, very great wise men born in Eastern and the West. In China, it's Confucius. In Europe, it's Aristotle and Plato. In India, it's Buddha. So, Confucius has a very, very high reputation in China and in the world at large. And also, as Chinese people described, how is the role of Confucius in the history of China is, once there is, if Confucius was not born, mankind has to grow big in the night. And also now the Confucius was estimated as one of the great thinkers, educators, politicians, and the moralists in China and the world. And also his contribution laid the Chinese political philosopher, educational, and ethical system. So now I think, as you know, Confucius was born in more than 2,500 years ago. Of course, his thought was inherited and heritaged by other Chinese thinkers and also ordinary Chinese people. So now we call this kind of theoretic system as a Confucianism. Among those people who heritage from Confucius, as we know, there is Mencius and Xunzi and Zhuxi and so on. At a different historical period of China, they developed the Confucius theory and theories and the rule of the behavior like that. Among those very, very comprehensive system of theories, I just want to take some, I think, the main points of this system to show them to you. Firstly, I think the core value of the Confucianism is, firstly, the spirit of rationalism. What's the meaning of rationalism from the Confucius? Firstly, I think Confucius believed that mankind exists and evolution and has its evolution guided by rules, not by natural rules, should by human beings' rules. And secondly, he think that every people would be educated to be a gentle, but of course, maybe excessive for the British Queen. And secondly, he has a very, obvious dialectical methodology. He believed that a transition or conversion between good and bad, between gain and lose. So he concluded that maybe the biggest rule for the life, for the mankind, is balance. So he believed that the balance is good. So what we will do is we need to make clear what are the two extremes For example, what's the left and the right? What's the best and the worst? And then what we will do? We need to keep them middle way. Third is his pragmatic activism. Also, you know, now when we talk about the Chinese people or Chinese people's behavior, I think the pragmatical is one of the most used word to describe the Chinese people. I think certainly it's from the very, very deep influence from Confucianism. Because as we know, Confucius didn't have any books, articles, or papers. Now we can know what he thought, what he was thinking at that time. It's just from some notes by his students. And almost the whole life of the Confucius, he just doing one thing. He just traveled to different countries. Of course, as you understand, at that time, China is, you know, is not a unified country like today. There are so many small countries like today's Europe. And he, for the purpose of practicing his political ideal, Confucius and his students, they traveled to different countries to promote his theory, to persuade those kings to do something better to the people. But finally, he failed. Almost nobody understand and accept what he was thinking and what he was doing. Finally, I think another most important characteristic of the Confucianism is humanism. There is a very, very remarkable words by Confucius is he thinks that if there is a rule, law, or theory, if it is useful or not, it depends on if it is useful for people. Otherwise, it's nonsense. So I think that's a very, very remarkable reflection of this humanism, of Confucianism. Secondly, I think Confucius asked for those politicians or kings at that time to practice a kind of renzhen, which called benevolence of governance or benevolent governance. Now it's because it's a Chinese word, so it's a little bit difficult to be translated into English or some other languages. But now we can find out a very, very comprehensive explanation in English to this word. It also means the benevolent politics, and also it also means the humanity. You know, because this is a very it is not a so clear concept. So almost every time his teacher his students asked what's the exact meaning of this word to Confucius. Finally, Confucius said that, anyway, what's a Zen? What's a benevolence? It's loving somebody else. So we can find out some, similarity between the Confucius and the Christian. Yeah, now I will try to touch the main point as quick as I can. Now what we think is after more than 2,500 years, we need to concern about the fate of the Confucianism in China. I think in the, we call the modern China period, there are some, I think a kind of a clash between Confucianism and some other theories or rules like that. Firstly, it's the beginning of is in the 18th century, especially when the European countries expand to Asia. So I call it the first meet between Confucianism and Capitalism from Europe. You know, at that time, because China was defeated by European countries, and then we called a part of the colonialism by some European countries. So at that time, the traditional Chinese intellectuals, they felt more and more disappointed with this Confucianism, because they think no matter how good it is, it couldn't be helpful for Chinese people to avoid this kind of destiny of being conquered like that. Second time is what we understand happened in 1970s, 1960s and then 1970s. There was a cultural revolution in China. And what's the aim of this revolution at that time is to, we called, break down Confucianism. So I think it's another strategy for the Confucianism in China. The third one, I think, is after China practiced this opening up and reform policy, we called it its modernization period for China. For this time, the marketing economy was introduced to China. And then the traditional mindset, traditional lifestyle of Chinese people has been challenged by this very different style of life, style of thinking. Till now, these challenges to China still going on. Yes, so that's the reason we are talking about the Confucianism and Confucius today, because now, frankly speaking, the godliness of the very, very fast growth, economic growth, in the past 30 years, now China faced some huge problem and some big challenges. Firstly, we have to pay the price for the high-speed economic growth. We now the problem is the traditional social structure was broken up by some political movements and also a very, very too fast economic growth. People felt uneasy for everything. And also as a result is the traditional moral system in China needed to be reconstructed. The bad thing is now in Chinese society, most of the people, they believe nothing except for making money as quickly as possible. So I feel a little bit of shame as the Chinese people said here that some days ago when I heard that in last year China overtook the United States, become the number one in the world as a buyer of luxury goods. Okay, it shows that, okay, Chinese people become richer and richer, but the problem is just a few people. Because at the same time, according to the per capita income, China is still a poor country. So it could not be acceptable that in a poor country, there are so big purchasing power just of by some few people. I think all of this problem is because the government missed some opportunities of rebalancing, the economic growth and the social justice. So, and then the opportunity of upgrading the manufacture infrastructure, and for most of the time, those policymakers or government was driven by, some economical bubble. For example, the real estate bubble. So now China have to pay the price for these mistakes. For example, now China has to adjust its economical model and have to lower down its economic growth. But yes, I think what we, yes. And now I think, especially now under impact of the American and the Euro crisis, it gives maybe a last chance for Chinese government and for Chinese people to rethink about the gains and the losses in last 30 years. So for the government, it have to do something more with some new ideas to have some new model of development. I think now the goals for the government is clear enough. Is firstly, it want to take an opportunity to upgrading its manufacturers and invest more into a real economy, not just financial or real estate market. And also, they try to maybe follow up the thinkings of Mr. LaRouche to develop its national economy, not driven by the foreign stock market. Some days ago, I heard that now the Chinese foreign currency reservation has reached 3.5 trillion US dollars, almost the same amount of German GDP. I don't think it's good news for me. So I think that's a very, very big pressure for Chinese government, how to keep a balance. Because now there are more and more complaints from average Chinese people that how could you give give so much money to Wall Street or some other speculation market? Why don't you give it to the Chinese people? Because you are Chinese government. And also, I think that more important is we should go back to the way of thinking, the lifestyle of Confucius and the Confucianism. Even after 2,500 years, I think all of these theories, thinkings is still very, very useful, very, very instructive for Chinese people, and maybe not for Chinese people, and also for people from other countries. Because at that time, according to the Confucianism, it respect, firstly, the order, which means for everybody, for every part of society, for every organization in a society, we should make clear what's our mission, what's our position, and what's our joint efforts for the same goal, like that. So I think now, certainly, for China, especially for Chinese society, we need to do something more to get maybe a new consensus between the government, people, and the businessmen, everybody, and to reach the same goal. And also, I think, not only in China, not only for Chinese people only, also for the mankind, for the human being, we do have a same goal. We do need to reach a consensus between China and Europe, between China and Russia, between China and some other parts of the world. And yes, so I think that maybe for future, maybe the fourth one, I mean, for Confucianism met with Gotha and Sila, which means, because I think that in China, the Confucianism should be regarded as a glass base for all of this Chinese culture. So I imagine that once between China and Europe, we can have more and more communication, especially cultural communication. We can have more and more mutual understanding. Maybe we can find from each other for more and more solutions for our own problem and for each other. So I think it looks good, but what we need to do is we need to start right now. You know, some days ago, I joined a meeting, a round table in Brussels between NGO delegation from China and the European Union Economic and Social Committee. We touched the issue of intercultural exchange, and we recognized the principle is we need to, recognize the diversity and the differences between we started to get more common grounds. So I think it's my wish. I hope that it's also our hopes that we can try to do more for the last chance for the mankind. So I should end my presentation here. But finally, I try to get another 2 minutes to express my tribute as a Chinese scholar to Mr. LaRouche and his wife. Because as we know, I the relations between Mr. Zarush and his wife and China could go track back to 20 years ago, when at that time a very popular Chinese journal popularized one article from Mr. Zarush. In that article, Mr. Zarush predicted that China needed to do something more at that time. Otherwise, the Chinese wealth will transfer from the mainland rural area to the coastal area, and then export to other countries. And also, Mr. Zarush reminded that there is a very, very bad thinking in China that time is we need to get money, we need to make money as quickly as possible. It will be dangerous to the moral system of China. And it will be dangerous, it will be harm for those people, this elite, who can decide what's the right direction of China as a big country. So Mr. Zarush suggested that what China needed to do is China needed to go back to a classical national economic principle, because it's right to the basis or resources for all of these Western big powers rise in history. And 10 years ago, one of my friends, Mr. Ding, had an interview with Mr. Zarush. And he told me that he was very, very, admired Mr. Zarush because he is almost a legend as a people who lived in United States and Western countries. But he has this kind of encouragement, want to reshape the Western civilization. So I think no matter time is flying, and also, for Chinese people, we always respected this people who believe in his belief. He practiced his life for one goal as a Confucianist. So finally, please permit me to call Mr. Zarush, Confucian mentor. Thank you.